What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast, and this is episode number 40. I cannot believe that we're 40 episodes in, but here we are. And for the 40th episode, I couldn't be happier to have someone on that's in the space very, very near and dear to me. He's in the agricultural space, has a massive, massive business within that, has built a huge social media following, kind of spotlighting this industry, and just an all-around awesome guy, awesome dad, awesome husband. And so I can't be any more excited to get started with you today. So here we go. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Primal King Podcast. Super excited for my guest today. This is someone that I've been following on Instagram for a while now, and I finally have a chance to talk with him. This is someone who started his first real farm growing onions at the age of 16. Over the last 20 plus years, he's grown his operation from 10 acres to over 17,000 acres and over 90 employees. He's built a massive social media following, including over 40,000 Instagram followers, by showing the day-to-day life of a large-scale farmer. He's been a groundbreaker in the social media world by shining a light on an otherwise pretty quiet industry. He's a speaker, an influencer, and most importantly, a husband and a dad. Let me introduce everybody to my guest today, Mr. Jay Hill. Again, Jay, super excited to have you on. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having me. I know it's been kind of a pain in the butt to get us together, but I'm glad we finally got here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of wanted to start back just with maybe where this whole journey started. When you were, I guess, maybe younger, because I grew up on a ranch, and honestly, like, I never thought I would be back at the ranch. I never wanted to be back at the ranch, and it's kind of weird how things work out. But I guess for you, was this something, getting into the farming industry, that you always wanted to do? Or, like, if you wouldn't mind, maybe take us back to where you started.
Yeah, so I just remember growing up living a fairy tale on the fact that I just want everything that I did, I wanted to do because it would make me become who I am today. So when you talk to people that want to live their dream, or, you know, how many times have you talked to somebody and they're like, oh yeah, I'm just living the dream. I truly can say I'm living the dream because one, God put me in the right spot at the right time. But at the same time, I grew up in a tractor tire sandbox behind my parents' house, playing with die-cast toys, the John Deere tractors, envisioning someday that I would be driving those tractors. And then that vision has changed itself into the fact that I kind of feel like I'm some days back in that tractor tire where I'm wishing that I was driving the tractors. Now I just have to make the payments to continue to afford them. And I get to watch our guys drive them. But at the same time, I just had a wild turn of finding out who I am as a person. And that's taken me my entire life to continue. It's a constant evolution of finding out, you know, who is Jay and what stands in Jay's way and what stands behind Jay's support. And I don't like talking to myself in third person. But at the same time, to start in that sandbox, and I remember walking home from school and having a conversation with a girl, and she, or walking home from the bus stop, and she said, well, you can't be a farmer because you're not big enough and you don't have any animals and you've got 10 acres. You can never be a farmer. And that just burned me up. And I just remember thinking, okay, I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you that I can be a farmer. And I didn't do that as vindictively, but it was just one of those things that just kind of lit the fuse on what I wanted to do. And then I would stop at nothing to get to where I wanted. And while many of my friends got to do spring break in college, I was planting chili, or, you know, if they were off hanging out with girlfriends or whatever, I was irrigating, or, you know, it was just one of those deals where, I cut my teeth working for other farmers and for other operations, understanding the business side of things. And it's really opened my eyes to, if we're going to be profitable in agriculture, kind of what we need to do. And I say that with you needing to take a grain of salt and the fact that things can change tomorrow and I could, you know, I could lose everything, like any business person. But at the same time, we've been very blessed and very fortunate by the people that have surrounded themselves and latched onto my dream. It's not that I'm the best farmer. It's not that I understand how agriculture and agribusiness all tie together. it's just been from the fact that I've been able to talk to people and understand what needs to happen to be successful. And then people have come and said, hey, if you need this or this, I would love to join your team. And we started with one employee, Miguel Ramirez, in Las Cruces, and it's turned into now over 110, 120, I don't know, total. But at the same time, of just unbelievable people that link themselves to what we're trying to do. And we've gone down a very successful road with a lot of hard lessons to learn. But at the same time, I'm just so happy to be where we're at.
So you started, if what I read was correct, you started with 10 acres and then you kind of started going to other people and basically farming their ground. Is that kind of how this whole, I don't know if you want to call it this whole, massive business started, but is that kind of how it worked?
Yeah. So the first business that I started was at 10, and I was taking my dad's tractor and taking a box scraper to people that had 5 to 10 acres or a disc. And I would clean their pasture, or I would disc it and get the weeds down and manicure. And we got a backhoe. And I think at 14, I started doing some backhoe. I dug some sewer line, and before the craziness installed that you had to have a license to do any of that kind of stuff. So I've dug septic tanks and horse graves and you name it. I've done all that kind of stuff. And so that kind of got the ball rolling. And then after our first year of growing onions, we made a little bit of money, and that gave me enough passion and power to go behind and say, okay, this is a viable business. Let's lease the neighbor's place, and then let's buy the next neighbor's place. And it just kind of continued to roll itself. We were on a rocket ship until 2011. And I was growing a lot of lettuce, and lettuce is like the cocaine of the drug world. Like it's like, I know what that even is, but you start off with a business model by knowing that you can make a lot of money. So with fresh produce, especially lettuce, if we could plant seed at the right time to bridge a gap between Arizona's harvest and California's harvest, there's like a 2 to 3 week window in there where you would just make a pile of cash. And so I got hooked. I hit a couple markets right off the bat, and then it's kind of like going to the casino, and the fact that you made a bunch of cash, you go back and you start losing it, and you just keep going back and you keep going back and you keep going back. And so we were going through this big cyclical change. In 1 year, I was going to buy a Porsche. The next year, I'm praying to God I keep my farm. And 2011, I was growing 300 acres of lettuce, almost 300 acres of lettuce, and doing a bunch of private label stuff and really trying to get out there in the market. We were having a company that was helping us, and all of our lettuce goes to the East Coast, so from Boston all the way down to Miami. And the biggest part of that being New York City, Boston, right in there. And I remember we had started harvest a couple of days into it, and we were rock and rolling. We're cutting 15, 20 loads a day. Trucks are going in and out. I'm seeing dollar signs flying around. I'm thinking it's pretty awesome. The phone stops ringing the next day, kind of trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And I turned the radio on, and they were talking about this tropical storm out in the Atlantic called Sandy. And Sandy became the hurricane that eventually slams into the eastern seaboard and destroyed the fresh produce market. And lettuce is a very brutal crop where you're going to have anywhere between $8,000 and $9,000 an acre invested in that crop to get it out of the ground. And I was there. I mean, we had trucks rolling across the country going to deliver, and then this thing hits, and we're dumping lettuce in feed yards and food banks. And so I just remember we were sitting on the tailgate, and I'm like, it's over. Like, it's my day is done. And thanks to a good banker and a supportive father and the good Lord's grace, we were able to come up with a business plan to get ourselves out of that predicament. And I learned a valuable lesson. If it's easy and it's easy money, it won't last forever. And so we kind of changed our platform. I've since linked myself with good business people. I have partners in all kinds of different businesses, and the people that I've associated myself with have been people that are willing to take the calculated risk that I'm willing to take, but at the same time, we're not willing to risk our soul to make another dollar. And then that's where we've seen our steady growth. And that's why we're That's why I'm living in Del City, home of 250 people, which we employ probably close to half the community. And it's just the most fruitful, wonderful thing in the world. We make some money, but we're not buying beach homes. So it's a good spot to be.
So you're the first person I've ever had on the podcast that lives in a town smaller than me. Our town is only 400, and usually it's...
Yeah, what a metropolis.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Normally that's about like, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand, you know, smaller than everybody else that I talk to. But hey, right? you're officially the smallest town resident of the Primal King podcast.
Yes, I knew today I was going to win something today. I didn't know what it was going to be.
I don't know what the prize is for that, but you know, we got to note it. So one thing I wanted to ask, because I know you just touched on your dad, and you know, a lot of the kind of the reason behind this podcast starting and everything else was when I, you know, my dad passed away suddenly, ended up coming back to the ranch again. The followers kind of know the story that's been following the podcasts, but like for you,
great podcast, by the way. Really.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Where did your dad tie into this? Was he pushing you to do it? Was he just helping you? Was he like, this is your baby? Like, how did that all kind of come together?
I've got to get him. I mean, we got to write a book on my dad. He's turning 80 this year. And he still is operating about 800 acres. You know, he's got employees, but he still just talked to him the other night, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and he's baling hay. I mean, he's an animal. And, my dad grew up, poverty doesn't even equate to how my father grew up. They put their milk in a stream because they had no running, or they had no electricity. They had no running water in their home. Grew up in backwoods of Tennessee on a tobacco farm. His parents died when he was 8. You know, he was the oldest of 4 boys, and they split him in foster care, sent 2 to one uncle and 2 to the other. And he equated his childhood as it was like slave labor, you know. Yes, they loved him and they cared for him, but at the same time, you got out of school, you were working. You know, it's a weekend, you were working. You got 2 pairs of shoes for the year. Didn't matter if you outgrew them or if you wore them out. So you wanted to make sure if you could be barefoot, you were barefoot as much as possible because you weren't going to get more clothes. Same thing with overalls. Cured their own meat. I mean, just unbelievable story. He knew that the only way that he was going to get out of Tennessee was to be smart or to be fast. And he was fortunate enough to be both. I think he ran the 40 and a 4.3. He's a quick boy. And got picked up to go play football at Texas Western, which is now UTEP in El Paso, Texas. And he tells a story that he had 2 Piggly Wiggly sacks and $11 and got off the bus and hated it, just hated the desert. It was brown and dry and didn't like it. Got through school and moved back home, went to work at a filling station. Vietnam broke out, and he got called up. And they sent him to Fort Bliss, El Paso, Texas, right back to the same spot. And so another wild turn of events. He ended up staying in the military for the next 17 years and was based out of Fort Bliss, out of White Sands Missile Range. And then he's been in the desert ever since. But the entire time that I was trying to build something, he had gone on and went to work for a technical school company and been very, very successful. And I grew up. The first, I don't know, 5 years of my life, we were very, 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 very poor. He'd gone through a divorce. He'd met my mom. He was teaching school, and he got hired by this company to be a recruiter. And, you know, their story is pretty awesome in the fact that they had enough money to get us in the van and get us to Phoenix for training, but they didn't have enough money to get us home. And so we stayed at a hotel that had a continental breakfast, and my mom was just taking all of this stuff from the continental breakfast to make sure we had enough food. And good Lord provided again. They gave him a signing bonus there that was able to get us back home, and he never looked back. And so as I'm coming up the ranks, he's like, you need to go to work for this school. You need to go to college. You need to go to work where I'm working. You can make a killing. You've got the right personality for it. And here I am, you know, 14, 15 years old. And I'm like, nah, school's not for me. I don't want to do this. I want to be a farmer. And he's like, trust me, grew up on a farm. You do not want to be a farmer. And I think he saw that I was so passionate about it that he said, you know what, if you want to try it, get a business plan together and figure out how you're going to do this. And he said, if the bank's okay with it, then I'll get okay with it. And, the bank was okay with it, and I think he was pissed at the same time.
Didn't think they would like it.
Yeah, and he's been 110% support. We're still business partners in 3 or 4 businesses, and it's been absolutely amazing. Him and myself are very wired similarly. So you want to see fireworks and sparks, the two of us can flat not agree. But at the same time, I've learned so much from the guy. And then just, to watch him, he's 80 years old. And I'm like, Dad, like, why don't you find somebody to run a Baylor for you? He's like, ah, I like it. Keep me young. Hey, whatever, man. You do you. So, but it's been pretty wild. It's been a pretty wild run.
That's so cool. So he's out there at 80 years young at 3 a.m. baling hay. Like, seriously, if I'm going to live that old, I want to be able to do that, or else just, you know, take me a little earlier, I guess, right?
And that's his thing. It's like he loved to play golf. Like, he – and until I did the Del City move, me and him would play golf on Thursdays. Like, we would sneak off, and there's a bunch of old crooks that would play golf, and it's a good way to go lose some money. And so we would go over and talk smack and play a little bit of golf with all these old boys. And when I moved, he quit. And I said, Dad, I said, you should be playing more golf right now. Like, you have the means to have somebody take care of the farm. We've got an unbelievable foreman at that farm. And he's like, I just don't have the drive to do it. He's like, I'd rather work. And so, hell, he's still to this day, I could walk up to him and be like, Dad, I've got this great business idea. We're moving to Hong Kong, and we're going to sell car tires. And he'd be like, cool, let's pack up tomorrow. I'll meet you at the airport. You know, I mean, just unbelievable drive to live and unbelievable drive to just continue to prove that age is only a number.
Well, do you find it fascinating, I should say, just the difference in work ethic from that generation to maybe even ours or the ones below us? Like, I'm not here to trash millennials or whatever, but, you know, you see the things that we complain about now. And then you hear the story about your dad or, you know, even like my parents and my great grandparents. I mean, I'm like 2 generations away from, it would have been like my, I guess, 3 great grandparents, to where like they lived next to a river in the bottom of Hell's Canyon, and they didn't come out. They didn't see people. They just basically had their little place. And it was just like the old Wild West. And it's like, that wasn't that long ago. To now, where we're all like pissed if we get the wrong flavor of a mocha latte at Starbucks or something. I mean, we melt down and want to sue people. Like, I mean, isn't it fascinating to where we were not that long ago to where we are now? Like, what are your thoughts? I mean, kind of on that side of it.
I think we're in a generation gap right now where people ended up having to work so freaking hard to survive that they wanted to allow their children the opportunity to not have to go through the struggles they did. Because think about it, your dad, I'm a dad. We want the best thing that we can do is to give our kids the best opportunities they can get. But we got to a point now that we have allowed kids to dictate what they will and will not get. The reason that we see our country in such a huge uproar right now is because of the fact that we have not been able to install, and in my generation, I'm a millennial. Dang. If you sit here and look, I know some days I say that, I'm just like, oh God, don't tell people that. But at the same time, I mean, to understand the feeling of accomplishing something that somebody said you can't do. And I'm not talking about tearing down a statue because it was bolted down. I'm talking about actually going out, growing a crop, delivering a good or a service, doing something that people think that you can't do, to be a millennial and to say, you know what, I am going to be the most successful person that I know. And that might not be monetarily. It might be in the way that my lifestyle was lived and things like that. I think we are sitting here staring at the issue between my father, you know, I mean, and him being 80, we kind of skip a generation there. He was 43 when he had me. But at the same time, there was a lot of those baby boomers that just didn't want to have to put their kids through some of the stuff that their parents had seen, you know, and that we've enabled a society to not do that. And that's why you look at the average age of American farmers and ranchers, it continues to grind and climb. Now there's this huge, you know, there's this huge movement now where let's find out where your beef is coming from or your bison, or, you know, there's local butcher shops and there's all of this stuff that's going on. But if you look at the core fundamentals of agriculture, we're driven around by a bunch of 65-year-olds.
Yep.
You know, that's there's a lot of these conferences that I'll go and speak to. You know, I'll speak to 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 people, and I will straight piss off a good half of it, because I'm sitting here saying, if you are farming to inherit something, all you're doing is allowing your parents to rack up more debt that you're going to have to pay for them. You know, and parents are like, excuse me, they're going to get to inherit a farm. We're in the land of entitlement. Stop entitling ourselves and start earning it. That girl that told me that I will never be a farmer today, I see her from time to time, and she's like, I had no idea that you were capable of putting those things together. I said, it's not just me. But at the same time, it wasn't a thing that said, well, I was entitled to 10 acres, so I knew that I could get 20. It was, I'm going to bust my rear end until I get to a point that I know that I can build something bigger and better than anybody else.
Do you think that, because I see like a lot of the same statistics that you're looking at, I mean, again, like we're fifth generation ranchers here, but we're even having to do some things different. Like we're starting to do more direct to consumer beef because some of the big beef monopolies, and you know, I can rail on against that, but it is what it is, right? And so I've noticed one of the things it sounds like you do is that you understand what it is and then you change, right? You have to make adjustments, right? Because it's business.
So let's regress just a little bit. So In the same context of the conversation that we're having, and you're talking about the big six, right? You're talking about why beef has gotten into a sense that we've gotten into, right?
A little bit.
Why are we there? The reason that we're seeing that in produce, we're seeing that in anything, is because a certain few companies have been able to encourage their workforce to work harder, to grind harder, to do something that somebody was not else going to do. The fact that maybe your parents or maybe your brother didn't want to work that hard, that they don't want to have to figure out how to cut their own beef and build their own online store and do all those kind of things, is the whole entire reason that we're sitting here today. And so my biggest thing is we see success because of hard work. You're seeing success because you're willing to reshape the whole form of what business looks like. And so people say, well, these guys are new pioneers. No, we're just people that have a work ethic. And we are in a state of crisis in this world of agriculture because we've gotten to a point where it's easy. It's easy for me to stop growing all of these mixes of vegetables and stuff that I do. I can plant corn and cotton. I can do corn and cotton. I have no control over where it goes. And all I do is get on Facebook and bitch and moan about the fact that I don't make any money. You know, but instead of that, and that's what makes a lot of people mad. They're like, well, we can't grow specialty crops where I'm at. Then you have to find something that is going to drive you to work harder, to establish a market where you can have control of who's going to pay you and why they're paying you and how much they're paying you. And that has changed my whole entire world. Like the first commodity crop that I've ever grown is cotton. I started growing cotton 3 years ago, and it took me 1 year to figure out I'm not going to do this if I can't control where I'm going with it. And since then, it has been a lot of fun figuring out how I'm going to get my cotton back so I can sell it to you.
Yep. See, and I think what you talk about on the entitlement side, I totally agree with, because I think a lot of farmers and ranchers that I know of, and I don't feel like this is necessarily an indictment on them, but they've always done things. Like I even remember my dad. It's like, well, why do we do it that? Well, it's all the way we always did it. That's the way Papa did it. That's the way. And it's like, okay, but why? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make financial sense or whatever else. And it's like, well, and it was almost kind of like, if you're going to be a rancher or a farmer, you got to go down this lane. You don't want to look too far outside of the box. You don't want to look for different things to do. And I think a lot of them have kind of died on that. Right? Because they weren't willing to change.
Yeah. We've seen so many people that want to reinvent the wheel, and we watch the wheels just fall off and they go bankrupt and then you never hear from them again. But at the same time, the people that have been wildly successful, look at Jeff Bezos. He was an online bookstore, for crying out loud. You know, and everybody's like, I can't believe it. I'm Amazon. That guy is brilliant. I mean, the fact that we live in a society where we can actually slowly change something. Yeah. And I agree. I mean, we get stuck in our way, especially in agriculture. We're like, well, you don't plow here because grandpa didn't plow, or you do because he did, you know? And so for us, it's like, okay, we're going to dedicate a certain amount of our acreage or a certain amount of our revenue to experiment. 9%. We're going to play with, we're going to plow it, or we're not going to plow it, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. And if it works, we're going to continue that to 18%. If 18% successful, then we're going to continue that on to 36%. And we're going to continue to drive that change. At the same time, you're not sacrificing the ability to provide for you, your family, your employees, and so on. And so finding those kind of things that we can start to dominate a conversation with and say, hey, it's cool to think outside of the box. At the same time, you don't have to worry about risking your shirt in the process.
Yeah. See, it was funny because I had a conversation with a local guy here. So in our little town, it used to be a pretty big ranching community, not farming. It's too steep and nasty and everything else, but a lot of ranches used to be here. And now there's really kind of two of us left. And so I was, he came out to use our scales and I was talking to him about this direct to consumer beef. And to him, that was just like a foreign concept, just something that was so far. Cause it's like, you bring them in the fall, you sell your calves, you just do that. You're kind of at the mercy. And so I was telling him,
no idea,
like,
where they're going.
Yeah, exactly. And you have no idea what the price is going to be from one year to the next. I mean, there's just so many factors that you can't control. And I was like, you know, if we do this direct to consumer, you can be more in control of your fate. You can dictate it. You can, through good marketing, all this, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, it's just too much paperwork for me though. You know, he's like, I've never been willing to look, because it is a nightmare. The USDA and stuff, it is. There's a ton of red government tape. But for those people who are willing to, like you said, do the work to get through it, there's massive amounts of benefit to do that. But again, I think a lot of people aren't willing to do that work and to go through the hoops and jump through all that stuff. And it's like, we will, you know, we are. So yeah, I definitely see your point on that.
I mean, up until the last 12 years, man, if you wanted to do it, you could, I mean, dream it and do it. You know, the amount of regulation that we've seen over the last 12 years has been, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, the amount of, and I thought about that. I was like, you know what? Maybe it's better if I just go ahead and jump into the politic world, get into politics and just try to fight for our country back.
Yeah.
Not doing that just because I'm starting to understand. When a swamp's full, you can't just pull the drain out, man. But there's still enough loopholes for a person that honestly wants to make an honest age wage to be able to go out, fight, block the system, and do something. And that is where we've been able to open our markets up. The hardest thing with that is being able to say, listen, there's a lot of people that don't like me because we're big, right? I mean, you think about it, everybody's like, you're a factory farm. And in all reality, we're not a factory farm. The fact that I'm really not a good farmer, but I've hired unbelievable people that are soil scientists, that are agronomists, that are mechanics, that are people management, HR. I mean, there's all of these amazing minds that make us unbelievably efficient versus what I was when I was 22 years old, farming with four employees and tractors that were leaking oil all over the crop and doing all those kind of things. And so being able to prove that to your end consumer is where I'm stuck now. You know, Instagram's Instagram, but at the same time, I am sick to death of talking to agriculture.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I need the end consumer.
Do you view yourself, because I think you're making such awesome points that a lot of people don't really get when they move into the business world, which is, and it goes back, I had a conversation with a friend of mine a while back and he was like, oh, I'm a bit way better operator than the owner of our excavation company. I'm like, Well, yeah, you should be, because he's not an excavator. He's a business owner. Like, he wants
you. Why am I on a podcast with you and not sitting on a tractor?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This does not make good sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the funny thing is, though, is that, like, a lot of people, I think, have a hard time going from, like, kind of working in their business to working on their business. There's always that philosophy. But, I mean, do you see yourself, I guess, more as a farmer or more as a business owner who happens to be kind of in the agricultural industry?
I am trending to go away from the farmer. I'm trending away from that, more of a business person, because of our rapid expansions. My responsibilities have changed. Instead of just being able to provide for my family, I've now got 120 other employees with families that I've got to feed. And so the betterment of my day needs to be focused on making sure we are moving in a direction that's going to provide revenue for who we are, be it the farm. So if it's making a decision on what crops we're growing and how we're rotating them, that might be the farmer aspect that I get. But you'll still see sometimes, like, I helped the guys bale oats a couple weeks ago. You know, so get up at 1 o'clock in the morning, jump on a baler and bale until, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, and then go back and have to sit down in the office and make business type decisions. And so I think as time moves on, I will be more removed from the farm, which makes me sad, because this is what I love. I mean, the farm is is where I'm my happiest. But at the same time, the ball is rolling in a direction that I've got to make sure that those that are working here have the same level of satisfaction that I've had.
So one thing that you do, and I'd love for you to tell everybody about, is Tactical Tuesday. So what, what's that all about?
Yeah, so you, one person is not able to hear from more than six people in a business environment. It's something that I learned in a trading course, and this is something that PepsiCo has is implemented. But if you have, like, I can't tell you how many managers I got right now. There's 12 managers. If I was to have all 12 managers come in and speak to me every single day and tell me what was going on, do you think my ability to address the problems that they're facing every day would be able to take place and happen?
No.
No way. But what I can do is I can say, listen, you're going to report to this person, and that person is going to report to this person that reports to this person. And then I sit down and I've got six mouths that I'm talking to. There might be 10 people at the table, but six of them are reporting to me. The rest are just there to relay information if asked. And so we make a structural tactical plan about what we are going to accomplish for that week, and we attack on it. It is an hour and a half. It's 90 minutes. It is a structured meeting saying you have to put this, 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 and this, and then goes through all of what each manager has. There's some open comment where everybody can kind of talk about it. And then the last thing that we spend 45 minutes on is issues. And it is a chance for a manager to say, hey, manager B, you're a piece of trash, and I don't agree with your management styles. And it allows that person to react. And it allows all of us as a team to say, okay, we obviously have some underlying issues as a team. We've got to get this stuff squared away, and then we've got to do it in 45 minutes. So we really, really heavily, and unfortunately the last 3 weeks we've had some complications in my family, and we've lost that. And you can see the ripple effect. The day you miss a management meeting is the day that everything starts to ripple. So we've been working really hard at making sure that we have a specific day when we sit down and what we talk about, handling finances, letting everybody know where we're at with the farm, and then moving forward. So we do that with every company. And so Tuesdays are talk about go home, brain fried.
But does it seem to make the whole rest of the week though that much smoother without, because I know that a lot of times in a business, you always have the, hey, you got a minute, right? Everybody's, hey, you got a minute, Jay, can I just real quick? And then before you know it, you've spent 6 hours with the, hey, you got a minute questions. So, I mean, does it seem
to... Obviously, I don't have a minute. Me and you have been trying to link up for the last 3 months, man.
Yeah.
And so it's extremely important. And one thing is growing up with my dad traveling, he was making a great income, but he was driven by success, right? And his success at that in those days was finances. So his ability to be home all the time wasn't very feasible. And I don't want my management team to have to worry about not being able to spend time with their family. Right now, we call this Hell Week. It's actually 3 weeks, and it's when the last bale of oats comes in, because we're still cutting and baling 6,000-7,000 acres of alfalfa, 1,000 acres of oats, and we've got to get it all cut, got to get it all baled. It's all got to get to the barn before monsoon season starts, which I keep looking outside. The clouds are starting to build. And so my goal is to be able to have a thorough conversation with the management team, discussing what we need to accomplish in the day, get them out, get them done with their job, and they can go home, re-energize, get back to work, and we can conquer the next day. Because if you sit there and just push on people and push on people, that's when accidents happen. That's when mistakes happen. And we're too big to allow somebody to not be able to get the proper rest to take care of themselves or their operation.
Wow. Yeah, that's great stuff. So what do you feel like, because you've gone from like, I mean, if you look back over the last 20 years or so, what do you feel like when it comes to business? Because, you know, I have a lot of people listen that are starting up businesses, or maybe they've been doing businesses, they're not as successful. Like, if there was maybe one key that you feel like has maybe gotten you to where you are, like, I know work ethic, I know obviously you're a smart guy, but like, I mean, is there like one thing that you feel like if people would implement this into their business, it would be a game changer for them?
Understanding that failure is going to happen. Because you listen to all of these inspirational books and whatever, and if you have a mindset on failure, you'll never succeed. You know, failure is going to cripple you. And I say that a lot too. Farming or any business with the understanding that failure is going to be a part of your operation, but a bigger understanding that failure is just like our history. It's a part and it's a teaching tool of allowing us to understand a decision made is going to help us make a further decision later in life that we will not repeat what has happened. So even though you might start a barbershop and you might go broke, the second that you recalibrate and get into your next life, there's going to be so many things that you can pick up out of the failure of that barbershop that will add to who you are as a person. I have failures all the time. Huge, catastrophic. I mean, business blows. I mean, just we have failures. But those failures don't dictate the way that I'm going to pull myself back up and understand that, yeah, there might be 40-something thousand people following me on Instagram. And if I went broke tomorrow, you know, would they have something to watch? Absolutely, because I know that I can pull myself back up from the bootstraps. I can learn from the mistakes that I've made now and that I can build myself better in the future. And just you cannot sit here and dwell on something that's happened. You know, the fear of failure is a lot different than failure. Failure is a beautiful thing. So when you do fail, let it bloom into something else so that you don't do it again. But fearing that failure is crippling.
Yeah, it holds you back. And one of the best pieces of advice I think I got, because, you know, I had the ability to be around a lot of really successful people in like the online marketing space, was fail fast, right? Like that was the thing that I remember just thinking like, yeah, that makes sense. Because so many times, like you said, people will fail and then there's kind of like the sulking and the what happened and why did, you know, and it's like, no, fail fast, realize you failed, learn from it. And you got to get back going again because you can get stuck there, right? Like that just that failure, maybe the depression, it kicks a lot of people down for too long. And it's like, nope, got to fail fast and keep moving.
My dad was dead broke at 43. He's not dying dead broke.
Yep.
You know, 43, you think, oh, there's no way to recover.
Yeah.
He just laughs. He's like, what else are you going to do? You're going to sit there and wallow in it? Or are you going to pick yourself up and you're going to go rock? You know? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, there's been businesses that I've shut down and I'm like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. And he's like, get your ego and throw it in the trash can and go back to work. And I'm like, oh, yep. Sorry. Slapless. Just go back to work, man. And that's kind of what we've done.
Yep. No, you guys are doing awesome because of it. One thing I want to ask you too, I know we're kind of winding down here, but I'd seen something to where someone was giving you grief about wearing your name on your hat.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So here's the funny thing about that though, is that people will go out and they'll pay, what, $60, $70 to wear an Under Armour shirt or a Nike shirt. Like, will that ever pay you? Will that ever, like, are you endorsed by Nike? Because it's like, why the hell wouldn't you wear your own hat? Like, whose hat better to wear than your own business, right?
People think of it as pompous, you know, or think of it as egotistical or narcissistic or whatever you want to say. But at the same time, like, you know, and someone's like, oh, man, did you see the new John Deere caps are out or whatever? And I'm like, I owe $15 million to John Deere. Do you think I want to support that cap? Hell no.
I want to be their walking billboard.
No, that's not what I'm here for. And see, and this is something with social media that I learned the hard way. You know, I did a lot of stuff for free in the early days as far as, oh, I'll link up with a big chemical company and we'll tell my story of how we're doing all of this stuff. And all I'm doing is just helping their cause. You know, now it's like, you want to do something together, you're going to pay me. And good luck if I'm going to wear something of yours, unless it's something that I truly feel like is something to stand behind. And so that was a really hard lesson to learn. But now, like, rocking a cap with my name on it, you know, and someone's like, oh, who's Jay Hill? And I'm like, oh, it's me. They're like, what? And I'm like, same thing. I'm not going to pay for a Tommy Hilfiger shirt or whatever and rep their brand. Like, I don't care if I fit in or not. I know that this guy is true to his word. Let's just go with that.
Yeah. I know. I saw something about that when I was doing some of the research for the episode here. And I was like, it's so funny to me that it's okay to go and like wear a multi-million, billion, whatever dollar corporation stuff. And people are like, man, that's a badass shirt. But if you wear your own business hat, people are like, what an arrogant guy. It's like, right. where does that come
from?
If
I'm not wearing something that I'm a part of, then it's something that I am extremely passionate about. And I tell people that if you see me wearing a cap, that's not something that I'm directly involved with, then it's something that I directly care about. And anything, I do not, I'm not a walking billboard, especially with some odd, however many followers I have now. I'm not going to sit there and be a walking billboard for something that I don't support.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a funny conversation though. So I want to respect your time. I know you're a busy guy. I want to kind of get it wrapped up here, but like we talked about before, really like to talk about kind of liberation, the mindset to get you where you're at. I think we've covered that kind of lifestyle that you have. And now I know that you've had some challenges lately in your personal life, and I'm not going to get into that. But I mean, over the past couple of weeks, like has that, because I know sometimes when rough things happen, it can bring clarity, or it can, you know, maybe give you a different perspective. Like, has the things that happened recently, has that shifted anything for you personally, or?
Yeah, so let's just get it out there. My son started chemotherapy 2 days ago. He's 9 months old, and the thought process going into the hospital, you're terrified, right? I mean, you don't know what's the thing. I want to do is to be able to make sure that he's as happy and healthy and comfortable as he can be. But the realities of what was going on really didn't sink in. So mentally taxing, it's hell week. So we've got all of this stuff going on at the farm. Turns out my son is sick. And then we've got literally three brand new businesses launching right now. Like right now there is three huge businesses that are taking off that have been pulling my time. So I've been trying to be a good dad, a good husband, a good business owner. And then boom, we get kicked right in the balls by my son getting sick. And so I went on a week and a half kind of just pity party, you know, where I'm still posting stuff on Instagram, but you can tell I'm not anywhere close to being mentally focused. Employees, you know, just all kinds of stuff going on where I'm just sitting there saying, I can't believe that I'm in this situation. Why me? And blah, 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 blah. And I remember we got our son checked in 2 days ago, and I had to do something. I had to run back to the pickup. So I put my mask on and I'm walking back through the children's ward. And I just looked around at all of these kids that are going through so many horrible, terrific, I mean, just things that you never wanted to see in your life. And I'm like, and I'm freaking out and I'm feeling sorry for myself when you see all these kids that they're playing soccer one day and they're diagnosed with leukemia or whatever it could be. And so that was, I mean, it was, as much as I hate the situation that we're going through, it is going to be one of the biggest successes that my family will have ever gone through, regardless of what happens. It is eye-opening, it is changing, and I know that life is short, and I know that my ability to leave a good impact is not going to be based on the fact that I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
And so that's it's really helped me. I mean, the last 2 days, I felt like I've kind of cleared myself up a little bit. At the same time, I've got a lot to do here on the farm and in business in general. And I feel very confident in being able to balance all of that now, just understanding it's not all about me.
Yeah. My wife's brother got cancer when he was 17, and he actually ended up passing away from it at 19. And she spent a lot of time in the children's hospitals. And that was when we were first kind of dating and everything else. But I remember her talking about just the perspective that it gives you, right? Because so many of us, we get so busy making money, we get so busy business and everything else, and then boom, something like that happens. And it's crazy, you know, sometimes how it can be a blessing in disguise, maybe just to get you to chill out and take a breath and be grateful, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is I think this ties into what we were talking about with fear. Yep. You know, the fear of failure. And, you know, I at first felt like I failed my son, but there's nothing that I could have done differently to change the outcome that we're at right now.
Yep.
At the same time, I now am starting to get to a point where I'm like, all right, this is going to be a story that's going to allow us to let Hayes, my boy, change somebody's life for the better. And it might be his dad's, or it might be somebody in Africa, who knows? But just getting that mental mindset together and rocking it is where we got to be. And it's what we've got to do.
Yep. Well, the good news for you is that I know you got a lot of people praying for you guys, and I know it's all going to work out the way it's supposed to. So, you know,
Yeah, absolutely. We're very appreciative for that.
my 7-year-old was praying for you the other night at dinner, man. So I told him, let's throw one out there. Yes, absolutely. So just to wrap things up here, I kind of wanted to move into the legacy side. And I know this is all kind of tying into it, but you know, when all said and done here, obviously you've got all these different businesses. You've had a ton of success. Obviously you're a family guy. Like when that day comes, what do you want the legacy of Jay Hill to be?
That he was able to give his kids the opportunity to do what they wanted to do without enabling them. My daughter will not inherit this farm. My son will not inherit this farm. They will not inherit the business. I am not inheriting a business from my father that's been owned. And I think that is something that is lost in the fact that we get to a spot where our legacy is the fact that I was going to leave my kids with 20,000 acres and $20 million in the bank account. My legacy will be that I hope that my legacy is that I instilled a passion in my children to think of others, to find what their true dreams are and that they chase them, that I gave them every opportunity to chase those dreams and let them fail.
Yeah, that's great stuff. That's great. Well, Jay, again, man, I appreciate you hopping on. I know how crazy everything's been. Really, really excited we got the chance to talk. And also too, where can everybody find you? I know you're big on Instagram. What's your Instagram handle?
Yeah, it's HillJ45, HillJay45. And I'm on other stuff, but I don't really check it.
Okay. Any way that anybody out there can support you? Like, do you have any way that they can help you out or support you in any way, whether it's going through the time right now that you're going through or just business-wise? I mean, I'm sure people are going to listen to this and want to be able to follow along and help out. So,
no, I mean, really, the biggest thing is thoughts and prayers. That's all we ask for is thoughts and prayers. Our main business is a feed company called Chaffe. So if you're feeding animals, if you're ever looking for feed for your animals, you know, you can always go to chaffe.com, reach out to the sales team, and we've got an unbelievable group of people that can help.
You guys ship up to Idaho?
Absolutely.
All right.
We got people in Idaho though, so we can okay. We can help you get some Idaho hay.
Okay.
But at the same time, I thoughts and prayers and just support from people, just having the knowledge that people do stand behind you. I might get a little political some days, and it does piss some people off. But at the same time, it's been a fun ride.
If people are listening to the podcast, I've already pissed them off if they're going to be pissed off about politics. So I think we're good there.
That's why I'm happy to be on here.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Jay. Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There is one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.